May it please the court. My name is Michael Bourne, 38464, and I represent Ms. Dotson in this matter. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal time. The case presented today is one of first impression here in Colorado, with one caveat. The Supreme Court in the Leninger case did touch on this issue. In footnote 3 of that opinion, the court set forth the elements of wrongful pregnancy. The court didn't make issue an opinion on that matter because the facts of the Leninger case didn't line up with a wrongful pregnancy claim. What we have before us today is just that.
Counsel, I'm going to interrupt you right away. There are lots of jurisdictions that have recognized the tort of wrongful pregnancy. There are a few that don't. And there's an awful lot written about this. And obviously, the operative question is in the nature of damages. What I'd like you to do at the outset is describe what is the injury that your client claims she has suffered here.
Well, courts have looked at the issue of damages in this situation different ways. And in the case at hand, the first and foremost thing is the cost of the actual birth itself. In our case here, the birth was very difficult, and there's significant medical bills involved with the birth. Of course, in addition to that, we're seeking pain and suffering for the birth. And lastly, there is the issue of the cost of raising the child. Jurisdictions have looked at that different ways as well. Some jurisdictions say yes, you can recover the cost of raising the child to the age of majority. Other jurisdictions will say, well, no, cost of birth, pain and suffering, you know, medical costs involved with bringing the child to term, but after that, you know, we're not going to award damages for private school or something like that.
Is the injury in the latter category of damages, is the injury actually the birth of the child? I mean, is the child the injury?
Well, the child itself is not the injury. It's everything that goes along with it. It's the injury is the financial burden of raising a child, or the financial burden of paying medical bills, or the pain and suffering involved with the birth. Now, some jurisdictions will say the cost of raising the child, at the very least, needs to be balanced against the benefit rule. It seems like courts have stayed away from that because it's hard to put a number on it.
But I'd like to get you and follow up on the Chief Judge's question, and not so much damages, but the injury. I understand the injury. This woman, well, I maybe even start duty and breach. The duty is he had a duty to terminate it in a reasonable manner. He breached that duty, and I think that's at least at this stage uncontested. And that resulted in her having a difficult pregnancy, and I understand all that, that injury. But in terms of the damages or the injury with respect to the child, isn't it a wrongful birth that the child should not have been born? He should have been terminated? Is that in terms of the injury, not damages and not other jurisdictions, just how you would plead it, and if allowed to go to a jury, how you'd argue it?
Well, taken that way, yes. Well, there's a lot more that goes with the birth of a child than the medical bills that I mentioned earlier, or the joy of raising a child. But yes, in this particular case, we have a situation where a healthy child was born. But that's the wrongful pregnancy tort that we're here for.
Well, but the injury is the birth of the child. The child, birth and life of the child is the injury that the plaintiff is suing on.
It's not this child shouldn't have been here, but the fact that the child has now been brought into the world, there are damages that accompany that.
But before you get to that's why I'm struggling. Before you get to damages, you have to identify an injury, and the damages then flow from the injury. And I, just very precisely, how would you define the injury that would support the kind of damages of rearing the child?
Well, the injury is, but for the negligence of the medical professional, this child would not have been born. So when couched in those terms, it is the birth of a healthy child when you're looking at it that way.
And the damages then would be the cost of raising the child?
Well, one of the possible categories of damages that could be awarded in a case like this. Again, at the very basic level, the cost of the birth, the cost of any prenatal care before the birth, from the abortion to the birth, any medical charges that would not have happened had the abortion been successful.
Counsel, are there any cases that you can cite, or are they, may be in your brief, but that allow full recovery?
That is less common, but yes, Your Honor. The Osh's case, the Connecticut Supreme Court case, allows recovery for raising the child. I may have mispronounced that. OCHS.
And that's raising a healthy child?
That's raising a healthy child, Your Honor. Now, some courts have considered public policy grounds why not to allow for recovery from damages from a birth of a healthy child. But the flip side of that argument is it public policy to allow for botched abortions? In this situation, a doctor does not successfully or competently perform an abortion. If a jurisdiction says there's no wrongful pregnancy, there's no recovery for that. There's no remedy for that particular professional negligence in that situation. Just as a surgeon goes in to remove an appendix and fails to do so, obviously there's remedies available to that particular patient. Here, a doctor goes in, performs a pregnancy termination without the tort of wrongful pregnancy, there is no recovery available. So at the very minimum, many jurisdictions have said, okay, well, at least you get medical bills, pain and suffering associated with the birth.
But here we not only have a healthy child, we have a wanted child, a loved child, okay? Just like any other parent, presumably. Doesn't that impact damages or the measure of damages? I mean, in order to have a healthy, loved child, you have to go through childbirth. So how is childbirth a damage?
Well, Your Honor, mitigation of damages in this case would be saying, Ms. Dotson, you have to put your child up for adoption. Or, Ms. Dotson, you found out at the beginning of your third trimester you're still pregnant. Okay, now you have to go get an abortion. Situations have changed by the time someone's carried a child to term. Certainly, once a child is born, it would be very difficult to say you have to mitigate your damages by putting this child up for abortion if you want to recover, you know, the cost of the birthing of the child.
Well, maybe that's a reason why not to define the injury as the birth of a healthy child as a cognizable injury. The fact that it would be so offensive to say normally, if you had defined an injury, you have a duty to mitigate your injuries. And if the birth of a healthy child is an injury, logically, then abortion or adoption should be a way to mitigate. And maybe that the fact that those are so offensive in terms of thinking of mitigation that way is a reason not to define that as an injury in the first place.
Well, if that's the case, then you leave the patient with no recourse if something like this happens.
No, I think you could define the injury. You've argued a different kind of injury, the wrongful pregnancy, the burdens, the medical and economic burdens of and physical burdens of the pregnancy. And that, I suggest, could be defined as a cognizable injury, but you could draw the line at the type of injury in terms of the birth and life of the child itself is not a cognizable injury. And that would avoid the mitigation issues, wouldn't it?
Certainly. One further issue, and courts have seemed to have gotten hung up on this part, If a court were to allow the recovery of the cost of raising the child to majority, Your Honor, I'll take just one more minute. How do we use the benefit rule in that situation? Well, in the civil justice system, sometimes we're forced to put numbers on things that are hard to quantify. Something we're a little more comfortable with is in a medical negligence case, the loss of limb or something like that. But that's likewise very difficult to put a number on. But yet, plaintiff's attorneys get up and make their closing arguments, and they try to anchor it to something. In this situation, there's actually a very good anchor available. Whatever the economist in the case says about the cost of raising the child, there's already numbers available.
But that's an economic cost. And sure. Economic costs are usually pretty easy to define.
I agree, Your Honor. I think the economic cost is much easier to define the cost of raising a child. And you give several options to, private school, not private school, something like that, different options for the trier of fact to choose from. But at the very least, there is some kind of anchor, some dollar amounts about what the economic cost is. In a case where a plaintiff is seeking only pain and suffering or impairment damages, there's absolutely no anchor besides what arguments counsel make or what comes up during the case. At least in this situation, jury's already seen a set of numbers, and then the argument of the benefit rule comes in. If there's no further questions at this time, I'll turn the remainder.
We have about 3.5 minutes.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is David Yoon. My registration number is 23448. Sitting at counsel table is Shirley Guillen. She is co-counsel on this appeal. We represent Dr. Dale Bernstein, a board-certified obstetrician gynecologist. The court asked the plaintiff's counsel the question, what is the injury in this case? In the trial court, plaintiff has always framed the injury in this case as the birth of the child. In her opening brief, the issue the plaintiff framed is very narrow, and I will quote, did the district court err when the court granted the motion for summary judgment with the finding that plaintiff failed to state a claim because the birth of a healthy child is not a legally cognizable injury in the state of Colorado? Although Colorado has not addressed this precise narrow issue, the majority of jurisdictions, whether you are one of the states that recognize the claim or you are not one of them, say that a birth of a healthy child is not a legally cognizable injury. Those states do not allow, as Judge Connolly pointed out, allow recovery for rearing the child because of the distastefulness in valuing a human life. They reason, for example, that to impose such a damage is a windfall to the plaintiff while imposing a disproportionate penalty on the defendant. Two, that it's psychologically harmful for the child to later learn that she was not worth what it took to raise a child. Three, that such damages are inherently speculative because if you apply the benefits rule, you have to measure the joy derived from having the child against the cost of rearing and birthing a child.
Counsel, in the record, there's, I guess, submissions from plaintiffs that include things like medical bills for mom and all that. And I don't remember what the complaint says, but I think it's pretty general. And I don't think you could read out from the complaint the request for medical expenses for the pregnancy, delivery, and all that. I assume from your brief, your argument is they didn't properly raise that.
They did not, Your Honor.
All right. Well, let's say we disagree with you.
Okay.
Are you saying that there are no damages, that the case is still only about the cost of rearing the child, or that this could be a viable claim for relief because it has alleged some damages, meaning medical expenses, et cetera, pain and suffering for the mother?
As Your Honor pointed out, we are first arguing that they did not preserve it. This was a novel issue of law, as counsel mentioned. And once we filed a motion for summary judgment saying that the claim is not recognized, they had an obligation to provide the trial court with legal authority supporting their claim. They did not cite a single out-of-state cases that they now rely upon in the trial court. They did not tell the trial court what sorts of damages are recoverable under a wrongful pregnancy claim. They have always maintained that we get full recovery. And if the court were to examine the trial court's order, it's reflected that they were only considering the birth of the child, whether birth of a child is an injury. As the court said, and I'll quote, the trial court said, plaintiff offers no further analysis or argument as to how delivery of a healthy child is a compensable injury or how to measure such injury. Trial court further talked about the application of the benefit rule, which requires the fact finder to weigh the joy of parenthood against the cost of rearing the child. And the court then said it cannot see how that calculation can be done in any principled, rational manner, and plaintiff, again, provided no argument suggesting how this could be done. At no time at the trial court level did they say, hey, judge, if we can't get the cost of rearing the child, we should at least get pregnancy or delivery-related expenses. That argument was not made in the trial court, and they had an obligation to do so. The case law that they are citing and the options that they provided in their opening briefs was far different from any argument they made in the trial court.
So your argument is that the sole narrow issue before us is whether or not in a wrongful pregnancy case you cannot recover damages for child rearing.
Yes, Your Honor. That is the way they framed the issue, and that's why I quoted the issue as framed by plaintiff's counsel in the opening brief. And I believe because that was the only issue properly presented to the trial court, properly decided by the trial court, that is the only issue that the court should decide.
So you're not here arguing that there is no such thing as that we should not recognize a tort for wrongful pregnancy, nor are you arguing, and this is question, nor are you arguing that there are not appropriate damages that can be awarded in a wrongful pregnancy tort, which is akin to a medical malpractice case.
Yes, that's our primary argument. Of course, we have alternative argument if the court disagrees with that position. Of course, as Judge Roy pointed out, the judge points out, how is childbirth a damage? And we, of course, our position is that as an alternative basis from what Judge Stevens just said, the process of having a child, it is inextricably intertwined with raising the child. Motherhood starts from the point that the mother learns that she's pregnant.
But this is a prospective mother that went to your client and said, I would like to terminate my pregnancy. And you would concede at that point, at least at this stage of the record, I assume, that your client undertook a duty to the plaintiff.
Yes, Your Honor.
That your client breached the duty to terminate the pregnancy.
I don't want to suggest that there was any sort of admission of negligence because there was expert testimony that.
No, I understand, but at this point, in terms of defending the ruling below,
yes.
that's an issue of fact. So at this point, we have to assume, which is a 12B5 or even a summary judgment, that there was a duty that was breached, and that duty was to terminate the pregnancy.
Yes.
All right. And having not terminated the pregnancy, did that not result, apart from the birth of the child, that resulted in physical burdens, in possible medical harm, and certainly economic harm to the plaintiff, didn't it?
I do want to point out something in the record,
okay.
And which was quoted by plaintiff's counsel in their opening brief and as well as ours. Yes, she went in for an abortion in the first trimester. Second trimester, plaintiffs learned that she was pregnant. There was deposition testimony that was presented to the trial court. She testified that once I learned, and she used the word re-pregnant, I decided that I wanted to keep the baby and raise her for myself. She when asked, did you explore the idea of adoption while you were pregnant? She said, absolutely not. At that point, when she realized that she was still pregnant, the child was no longer unwanted.
No, but she was denied the opportunity to make that choice and or to go through with the choice she'd made in the first trimester. And then she,
yes,
you're saying it, as a result of negligence, at least at this point of the case, we assume that's the case, and therefore had at a different situation confronted her 3 months later in the second trimester.
Yes. But what I'm pointing out is before she incurred any of her pregnancy-related expenses, any delivery-related expenses, she changed her mind. She said that she wanted to keep the child. She wanted to go through the pregnancy and deliver the child and keep her for herself. So before she even incurred any damages, and that's what I wanted to point out about the process of birthing, is that even plaintiff realized this herself. When in the deposition, she said, once I learned, I granted, in the first trimester, she wanted to have an abortion. Once she learned in her second trimester that she was still pregnant, she said, I want to keep the child myself. And I do not believe you can separate the joy of parenthood from the whole birthing process.
Well, counsel, let me ask you this, and there are thousands of hypotheticals we could all come up with, but what if a mom had been advised, don't get pregnant again because you have a tendency to get gestational diabetes and that can be dangerous? And then the woman gets pregnant and says, oh my gosh, I want to terminate this pregnancy, and there's a negligence in the termination of the pregnancy. And ultimately she has a baby and it's a healthy baby and she's very happy she had the baby. However, she did develop gestational diabetes, which I think actually happened here. And I'm not a doctor, but let's assume that there are medical ramifications in the future of having the gestational diabetes. Are there not damages awardable to the mother for the negligence of the doctor who did not terminate the pregnancy that she didn't want for medical reasons?
If that is a case where the child is harmed, where the birth of the child, for example, is in Leininger case.
Well, we're not talking about the child.
Okay,
just the mother.
Your Honor, but that's not the case in here, because what I'm saying is at the time of the second trimester, when she learned that she wanted to be pregnant, before she incurred any of her damages, she said, I want to keep the child. I want to go through with the pregnancy and delivery. So I would, yes, Your Honor, if you're saying that the child was never wanted because of the health risk and that she didn't want to incur those unnecessary medical risk, that would be a different case from here, though. But you could recover damages under those situations.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because besides talking about this particular case, and it's pretty early on in this particular case to decide precise questions like that, you're really asking for rulings of law on what is allowed in, as a claim for relief and what are allowable damages. And that has to take into consideration not just this case, it has to take into consideration, if it's a ruling of law, all possibilities.
Yes, Your Honor, it does. But this case, I want to point it out, that was decided 3 days before trial, a weekend before trial. All the discovery was done, the deposition was provided, and it's undisputed that Ms. Dodson, for whatever reason, decided in her second trimester that the baby was not unwanted, which is obviously a prerequisite to a wrongful pregnancy claim. She decided that she wanted to keep the child. And so I think under the unique circumstances of this case, in addition to our argument that the only issue is whether the birth of a child, healthy child, is a cognizable injury, in addition to it, if the court were to go on further, I don't think that in this case she should be able to recover delivery expenses and the cost of the birthing process because before she incurred those damages, she decided to keep the baby.
And medically at that time, an abortion was still legal or at least possible.
Yes, absolutely. In Colorado, abortion is legal even up to third trimester. And there's expert testimony supporting that also.
It's obviously a more invasive procedure the later it goes on, though.
Yes.
And the plaintiff could have thought, I want to do something in the first trimester that I don't want to do late in the second trimester for health reasons, could she not?
She could, but
isn't
in this case...
Risk, isn't there more risk to her in a late-term abortion than there would be in the first trimester?
Medically, it's probably true, but I don't think the record bears that out. I think that she just decided that she wanted to keep the baby. She didn't even explore it.
Well, probably
even
more importantly, is the risk of a late-term abortion greater than birth? Because that's the choice that you're making.
Yes, Your Honor.
I had a question. Most of the cases from other jurisdictions seem to be in the 70s and 80s, and I was actually kind of surprised, and both of the briefs use the term procedure, and I'm not sure exactly what procedure she went to the defendant for in the first trimester, but it seems pretty unusual. Is this unusual? Are there other cases that you're aware of in terms of preparing for trial where this comes and a doctor says, I'm going to perform an early abortion procedure, and it just fails to work, unbeknownst to the doctor and the woman?
Well, I also wanted to point out, you make a good point, but I'm not sure if I'm answering the question, is that most of the wrongful pregnancy cases that recognize the claim are virtually all of them are sterilization, involving tubal ligation, vasectomy, those kind of cases. There are very few, and there are some, but very few that recognize the wrongful pregnancy claim in the context of abortion. In several states.
Well, I guess my question is how, if you know, how often does it happen? Is this just a rare factual circumstance that this type of situation occurs, or is this something that happens with some regularity, that a woman goes to a doctor and says, I want to terminate my pregnancy in the first term, and the doctor says, okay, I've done it, and it just didn't work. Is that unusual?
I do not know if it's unusual or not. There are hardly any cases addressing the abortion issue. There are wrongful pregnancy cases recognized for limited damages and sterilization cases, but very few have addressed it because of the controversial nature of abortion. And in fact, Idaho, Michigan, Missouri, and South Dakota have passed legislation specifically banning recovery of damages for unsuccessful abortion.
Abortion is legal, is it not?
Yes, Your Honor, but all I wanted to point out is I think the Nevada Supreme Court addresses this. The issue of whether there's a constitutional right to abortion is separate from whether a court should allow the award of damages. And the court, I think, saying that matter should be deferred to the legislature.
Your Honor, our time. What was I going to ask? Never mind. I forgot my question now.
I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Maybe it'll come up during rebuttal. Go ahead.
First of all, I would like to address the issue of what was argued at the trial court level. Plaintiff's argument is certainly more nuanced and complete in the appellate brief. That's what appellate briefs are for. But in examining the record, the plaintiff did list separate categories of damages that the plaintiff was seeking in its response to the motion for summary judgment, which were the difficult birth, the medical bills, and the cost of rearing the child. These are separate categories of damages. This was touched on earlier, that the difference between a first trimester and a third trimester abortion, certainly a lot can change between 3 or 4 months of carrying a child.
Let me ask you this. I should have asked opposing counsel. The district court, although the motion was styled as a motion for summary judgment, I think the district court ruled on a 12b-5 standard, did it not? And basically, therefore, you look at did the complaint state a claim? Is that the basis that you recall the district court ruling on?
I believe the trial court did couch it in terms of a Rule 12 motion. However, in later motions for attorney's fees based on that, she did not award attorney's fees based on a Rule 12 reading. So it seemed in that motion she was couching it more of as a summary judgment ruling. In talking about mitigating this damage, it's saying, okay, well, plaintiff had plenty of opportunity. Colorado law allows for abortions in third trimester. She could have done that if she wanted to. That throws the negligence of the doctor back on the plaintiff. The plaintiff should have done this. She should have gone and gotten another abortion. Maybe this one would have been successful. And importantly, in this wrongful pregnancy type cases, and even the Leninger court in Colorado mentioned this, we were talking about the rarity of a type of case like this coming out of a pregnancy termination procedure. But the Linda Court does say specifically abortion or sterilization.
But, Counselor, it goes to the issue of injury. You have to have substandard care, injury, and damages. Is there an injury here? And that goes back to the question I asked much earlier. Is there an injury here? If you don't need to worry, I mean, we're not going to penalize the doctor for making a mistake that caused no injury. Right? So
correct.
My question keeps coming back to, is there an injury?
The injury to the plaintiff is
for having for birthing a wanted, loved, healthy child. Her injury is?
The injury is the risk associated with that particular birth. This is a hypothetical in this situation, but what if she died during this procedure? Or what about the gestational diabetes?
There's an injury.
What about the...
But that's an injury. If she got the diabetes, that's an injury to her that she might be able to recover from, but not from a wrongful pregnancy. Not for the birth of the child.
It's the attending circumstances around the birth, Your Honor. If there's no other questions?
No questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Case will be deemed submitted. It's a very interesting case. A written opinion will issue in due course. We thank counsel for their arguments and briefs. And the court will be in recess.